Good morning, everyone. Our 21st meeting of Education Innovation will come to order unofficially. We do not have a quorum yet, but the time is right for us to begin, and so we want to take advantage of the time commitment that the Office of the Legislative Auditor has made, as well as those who are attending this hearing. So welcome to the testifying table, Ms. Randall. I think you probably want to begin with some overview, so please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division. And before we jump into our release today, I just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, and this committee for hearing us so many times this session. We have had a lot of reports related to education, and we really appreciate, Madam Chair, your support, but also the members' support of our work. So I just want to say thank you. Today we are here to release our final evaluation of the year, and this one is on the Minnesota State High School League. And as you likely know, the State High School League is a nonprofit organization that regulates interscholastic competition in athletics and fine arts. So the state hockey tournament, volleyball games between schools, tennis matches, speech, debate tournaments. The Minnesota State High School League is responsible for regulating those competitions and establishing rules and procedures and policies around those, including eligibility, which students are eligible to participate. And our evaluation focused in particular on the eligibility issues surrounding transfer students, students who move between high schools during their 9th through 12th grade years. Based on our review, we found that the league has a pretty complex process for determining student eligibility. We looked at a number of different cases and found that for the most part, the league's final eligibility determination for a transfer student was consistent with its eligibility criteria and policies. However, oftentimes these decisions took a long time. We think there were some unnecessary delays. Sometimes those delays resulted in a student missing out on the season for their sport of choice. Sometimes those delays were caused by families and students. And sometimes those delays were caused by league policies, either unclear policies or unclear guidance, requests for documentation or information that's not really required by the league's written regulations, and not clearly communicated to families. In some cases, we did find that the league made inconsistent student eligibility decisions. For example, granting one student eligibility, yet granting another student in a strikingly similar situation saying that they were not eligible. So we did have concerns in a couple of cases about some inconsistent eligibility determinations. We also had concerns about the league's board of directors and the oversight that they provide. We had concerns about their oversight regarding these eligibility student decisions or student eligibility decisions, and also some concerns about how the league has established its bylaws, policies, and procedures. As you likely know, the legislature has exempted the league from the standard rulemaking requirements that state agencies must follow, but we think the league needs to have more transparency in its rulemaking processes. Now, as I mentioned in the beginning, I believe the High School League is a nonprofit organization that's kind of authorized by the legislature. But perhaps because it's a nonprofit organization, the legislature has given the Minnesota Department of Education some oversight responsibilities related to overseeing the league's regulations and also related to some reporting. And we think the Department of Education can do a better job in the oversight it provides. So, kind of in sum, we had some findings and concerns related to the student eligibility decisions regarding transfer students. We had concerns about the league's oversight of those decisions, the board's oversight of those decisions, and how the board establishes its criteria. We had concerns about the Department of Education's oversight. So there's kind of concerns throughout, and we have recommendations for the legislature, for the Department of Education, and for the league that we hope will help solve some of those concerns. But to get into the details, to tell you about the findings and explain more about those recommendations, I'd like to now turn to Valerie Bombach, who was the evaluation manager for this evaluation. Thank you,
Ms. Randall, and thank you to all the audit staff who are sitting in the audience. Your work is much appreciated here by the legislature, and thank you for also supporting Valerie and Ms. Randall. So thank you, Ms. Randall, and welcome, Ms. Bombach, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Valerie Bombach. I'm the project manager on this evaluation. And I'll start off the presentation today with a quick overview of the Minnesota State High School League. First, the league is a nonprofit entity organized to administer athletic and fine arts competitions on behalf of its member schools. One of the primary purposes of the league is to establish uniform and equitable rules for interscholastic competitions. The league represents member high schools who delegate their control of extracurricular programs to the league. Schools pay member fees to the league as well as fees for each activity that a school sponsors, for example, wrestling or debate or girls hockey. The legislature formalized the league into state law several decades ago, and this includes the delegation and arrangement between the high schools and the league. Today, the league is governed by a board of directors composed of 20 members. The board also has advisory committees. For example, members of the board, five members of the board, currently serve on the board's eligibility committee, which oversees eligibility decisions. This committee makes recommendations to the board regarding policies, procedures, as well as oversees penalties for violations of bylaws. The league has a central office as well as 16 administrative decisions with individuals who oversee competitions around the state. In 2016, there were 630 member schools as part of the league. In total, the league's operating revenues were about $16 million, with $13 million coming from tournament-related revenues. The large chunk of it is related to the tournaments that they put on for these state competitions. And $1 million came from membership services fees. As Ms. Randall mentioned, our evaluation focused mostly on transfer students, in particular the league's administration of transfer student eligibility, as well as the league's processes for creating eligibility regulations. Among our findings, we concluded that the league processes lack clarity and transparency. The league board of directors provides inadequate oversight of league staff eligibility decisions. We also have concerns about the league's rulemaking processes and the results of that, and I'll talk about that near the end of the presentation. And then lastly, we also surveyed high school activities administrators in member schools. And among our survey respondents, the majority of activities administrators largely support the league eligibility processes and their criteria for transfer students, including how the league creates its eligibility rules. Neither eligibility and transfer students are defined in Minnesota statutes. Rather, member schools and the board set these criteria. Under the league bylaws and procedures, students who transfer between Minnesota schools, between schools, are ineligible to compete in varsity athletics at the new school for 1 year unless they meet certain criteria. And I'll point out here that the league restriction is on varsity competition. It's not on varsity practice. That is, a student could practice with the varsity team or participate in certain scrimmages. In addition, this one-year ineligibility penalty for transfer students applies to each transfer that a student makes between schools. The rationale behind the league and member schools restricting student transfers is to deter athletically motivated transfers as well as the development of powerhouse athletic teams. Additionally, students who do transfer into school districts could displace other students from competing on behalf of their home team, and this is a concern among member schools. The league has developed a very complex process to handle the eligibility of transfer students, and I'll very briefly describe the process, but for a full visual of this flowchart, you can go to page 23 in the report. So very, very briefly, school activities administrators report transfers and their eligibility determinations based on league criteria to league staff for their review and approval. For example, if a student, here's one example, if a student moves into a new school district with his or her family, LEAD criteria would make that transfer student eligible to compete in varsity athletics because this is a scenario that is an acceptable reason for transferring. However, if a student does not meet LEAD criteria and is not eligible, families and students may appeal to the league office under certain defined circumstances. If the eligibility appeal is further denied, a family and student may also request a fair hearing with an independent hearing officer. However, the league can deny such a request. And lastly, throughout this process, the board of directors is responsible for the final decisions regarding the eligibility of transfer students. We analyze league data on student transfers and the overall outcomes of the league's transfer eligibility processes. And our analysis is more fully laid out on page 28 of the report. But some summary points are, according to transfers reported by member schools to the league, there were nearly 2,400 students who transferred in 2016. Again, these are students who transfer into a member school and are reported to the league. If a student transfers to a non-member school or transfers before a report is filed, the league would not, the transfer would not be reflected in our number here. During a recent two-year period, on average, about 53% of transfer students were deemed eligible for varsity competition. This excludes international students and foreign exchange students, this percentage here. Among those who were denied eligibility, about 132 students appealed to the league office each year. About 53 students annually requested an independent hearing to review the league's determination of ineligibility. And then lastly, the league granted about 10 hearings each year. However, I'll point out and I'll discuss later, the league staff also granted eligibility to many of these students who requested a hearing in lieu of providing a hearing. We also reviewed a handful of cases, about 40 cases, to evaluate how the league administers its eligibility processes and criteria. And we found that the league's final eligibility decisions, in most cases that we reviewed, that is about 35 of 40 cases we reviewed, the decision aligned with league criteria and league goals. And we could see from the files that in some cases, clearly the transfers were athletically motivated. However, we also found that the league decisions for some appeal cases were not consistent with league criteria or goals, particularly when compared with similar cases. And I'll give an example here. Two students who transfer into a new school district. One student leaves the state. Another student moves a couple of times within Minnesota. Both of the transfers were due to financial situations with the family. In one case, the student, a couple years later, moves back to attend the former school and live with friends and family because the student missed Minnesota. In this case, the league granted eligibility. In the other case, the student moved back to the former school to live with friends and friends' family to avoid further moves. However, in the second situation, the league denied eligibility and also stated that moving to transfer to live with friends is not an appealable option. So here in this circumstance, for us, we just could not conclude whether the league had applied criteria in a way that aligned with its goals and its regulations. We just saw dissimilarities in the way the league was handling cases. We also found that the league's decisions and handling of cases often took more time due to deficiencies in league eligibility criteria or inconsistent and inadequate guidance by league staff. Sometimes the delays were due to communication issues among schools. However, families and students sometimes contributed to these problems too. And here I'll give an example of where we see deficiencies in the criteria in league guidance. A transfer student can be deemed eligible if the transfer was due to a substantial negative change in the economic status of the parents. However, the league does not publish anywhere that a family must send in 3 years of tax forms that show the adjusted gross income. Further, there's no benchmark by which the league evaluates the standard, and the league also does not publish that it might also ask for additional information in order to assess a negative, substantial negative change in economic status. Lastly, we found that contrary to the league's own constitutional requirements, the board of directors and the eligibility committee provide insufficient review and oversight of league staff decisions. That is, the board and the eligibility committee has largely delegated the decision making to league staff. They rely largely on league staff to advise them of their decisions, and they do not conduct file reviews of most appeals and hearing requests. Part of our review included looking at the league's administration of its fair hearing process.
Excuse me, Ms. Baumbach. We have a quorum. This meeting is officially called to order. Please proceed.
Part of our review included looking at the league's administration of its fair hearing process. Transfer students who are deemed ineligible may request an independent hearing, but a hearing is not guaranteed by the league. First, I'll note here that the law does not require the league to provide a fair hearing process. However, we concluded that the process that the league does provide lacks transparency. There are no published criteria for obtaining a hearing, and we found that the league's reason for denying some requests was not clear based on information in the file. On the other hand, league staff often granted eligibility in some of these cases in lieu of an independent hearing. And this might occur because a family will present additional information by which league staff can make a final determination and that eligibility status might change. And lastly, I'll note here that the hearing officer or the board of directors, among the cases that we did review, sometimes reverse league staff decisions, and they made the student eligible to compete in varsity athletics. We believe that some of our concerns about the transfer student cases are due to deficiencies in the league rulemaking process. Again, the league itself is an entity that's organized to create rules for extracurricular activities and student participation in sports and fine arts events. And let me first explain here that the league's definitions of rules differ from that for state agency. That is, the league has what it refers to as bylaws, policies, procedures, and rules. And it uses different processes to create each type of this regulation. Most importantly, these league rules are exempt from the Administrative Procedures Act. And for those of you who may be unfamiliar with the APA lays out rulemaking requirements for state agencies. We looked at the league's processes for bylaws, policies, and procedures, and not the rules, because these regulations were most pertinent to the eligibility of transfer students, and the rules really pertain to providing the framework of participating in sports, like how many wrestling matches are allowed and the total pitch count that might be allowed. So walking through briefly the processes that are used, the league creates its bylaws through its 48-member representative assembly, that is representatives of member schools, who vet and review and vote on the bylaws. The policies and procedures, however, are created by the board of directors through its own processes. One point of note is that between the bylaws, policies, and procedures, there's an overlap in purpose. There are some bylaws that address transfer eligibility circumstances, and there are procedures that address transfer eligibility appeal circumstances and the hearing processes. So there's some overlap in the purpose of the bylaws and the policies and procedures. Regarding the league's rulemaking, we found that the league's bylaw process reflects some important concepts found in the APA. It includes advance notice, public notice, and comment periods. It has an open hearing process. League members debate and provide comment on proposed bylaws and have a public comment period and a final vote by the members to approve or not approve the bylaws. However, most of our concerns relate to the process used by the board to create eligibility policies and procedures, although we do have some overall concerns, too. First, the board makes frequent changes to transfer eligibility criteria. There's a lack of public notice and external review of proposals before they're adopted. Some eligibility procedures are poorly worded. They're unclear or, in our view, unreasonable. And we also found that there was incomplete reporting to the Minnesota Department of Education. As Ms. Randall mentioned, there's a relationship here that even though the League is a nonprofit organization of member schools, the legislature hasn't assigned an oversight role to the department. And, for example, the League is required to report proposed policies to the department as part of an annual review of the League. However, the League does not fully comply with this requirement. And then lastly, overall, regarding the rulemaking, we found that we think the League does not have sufficient criteria to address certain types of transfer scenarios. And this was an issue that we heard a lot from our survey respondents and from other activities administrators that we spoke with. For example, some students have parents who never married, and if a student transfers from one parent to another, they are ineligible unless they obtain a court order laying out the custody arrangement. So in this instance, our point is that families, students, and schools will not find published guidance regarding this type of scenario and whether or not they would be eligible or ineligible. As I mentioned, we also surveyed the designated school liaisons to the League, which are usually the high school activities administrators. And I'll point out that the majority of their opinions and responses differ quite a bit from our assessment and our concerns about the League processes and the eligibility criteria. For example, about three-fourths of high school activities administrators believe that the League Central Office makes the right decisions regarding eligibility. They also said that the appeal and fair hearing process provides fair and adequate due process to students. And then finally, they think that the League criteria to allow eligibility for transfer students are about right. We have recommendations to the legislature, the Department of Education, and the League itself. First, we think that the legislature should amend state statutes to require the League to establish a fair hearing process for transfer students. Again, the League does have a fair hearing process, but we're recommending that the legislature lay out this requirement in law. We also think the League should be required to follow certain rulemaking standards that are similar to those for state agencies. For example, we think the League should be required to maintain a public rulemaking docket on its website that provides, this would increase transparency for the public, for member schools, for families and students. Lastly, we see a role for the Legislative Coordinating Commission, Subcommittee on Administrative Rules, to review complaints about League eligibility regulations. This committee has similar authority over state agencies and their rules, and we think that the League could be brought under this review process. As I mentioned earlier, the legislature has given the Department of Education a role in overseeing the League. We think the legislature should amend statutes to expand their role. In particular, the department should be required to monitor transfer student eligibility cases that are appealed due to intolerable conditions at the former school. That is, a student transfers out of a school to a new school due to intolerable conditions. We think that the department should be notified of these events, and if a case proceeds to a hearing, the department should more closely monitor that schools are complying with their investigation obligations. MDE also should maintain a list of independent hearing officers for the League's fair hearing process. The League currently does this, but we're recommending transferring this activity to the department. Lastly, we think there should be a more comprehensive review of League transfer eligibility bylaws, policies, and procedures for compliance with MDE programs and related laws. Currently, the law only requires reporting of proposed policies and we found inconsistencies in what the league is sending over for review by the department. Finally, we have recommendations to the league. We think that the league should improve its online transfer forms and correspondence, in particular the transfer student appeal document requirements. By this we mean that the league should publish document requirements for which the league staff will evaluate and approve or approve eligibility. For example, whether a permanent court order might be required or maybe police reports might be required. We also think the league needs to do a better job of explaining its rationale for denying eligibility and appeals. The league should improve its website content and access to transfer student eligibility information for both the public and schools. This lack of published guidance for families was, again, a concern that was voiced by survey respondents, and we agree with the activities administrators on this point. Lastly, the Board of Directors Eligibility Committee should improve its oversight of eligibility determinations. We think that board members should be doing a more rigorous review of administrative decisions, such as file reviews. And this type of review by a board of administrative decisions is required in the league constitution, and it's a common expectation and practice of other state boards. With that, Madam Chair, I'll conclude my presentation, and I would be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bombach. Questions from members? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm a guest on this committee. I don't serve on this committee.
Representative Detmer, you're the one who motivated the topic selection, and so we want to hear from you. Thank you.
Maybe just a little history there. I was an educator and a coach for 34 years, and personally, I've always had good relationships with the league and working with athletes in my school. But as a legislature, we take a look at the big picture of things, that's what's going around in the state and even the country. And I took a look at some of the issues several years ago. This was an issue that I thought the league should probably have a legislative audit, and being that the last audit was done, I think, in 1998. And over the years, I spent 10 years now in the legislature, and I've gotten calls from various people around the state with issues with the league, and I thought maybe it's a time to have the audit. And I've even carried some legislation in the past for those students that have special needs that need to transfer to different schools, and we got the legislation through and it was signed into law by the governor. And I know that Roger Aronson, the league's lawyer, spent many times in my office going over these issues, but this situation that came up in terms of having a legislative audit was something that's been in the making for several years, and I think it wasn't just me, but many of the legislators felt that it was important to have a legislative audit done in the league. We do have oversight over the league, but I think through that process, the legislature felt that it was important to have that legislative audit. And what I did when I got all these different calls from the different parents, different families, I directed those calls right directly to the legislative audit. And Mrs. Randall took many of those calls, I'm sure. I don't know how many you took, but I know that maybe you could share a little bit about that. But I think that was important, that I wasn't the middleman, so to speak, that these calls went directly to the legislative auditor's office, and so they could document those calls. And I think that's the way it should be done. But I appreciate the league coming in here and being part of this, and because what we do in the world of high schools. That time that I spent in schools and teaching and coaching, we have a big influence on those young people that we come in contact with. And the league is a big part of that. Being able to put on these these sectional tournaments and state tournaments, and there's a big thing for our state. And I think it's important that we do have some oversight that makes sure that, you know, what does a legislative audit do? What does it do? It tells you where your strengths are, and it says, and it also tells you where you can improve. And I have confidence in the league that they're going to be taking a look at this and take it very seriously, and that the improvements are going to be made. And this is going to be the best thing for our schools and for our athletes and for our families. So thank you for letting me come into the committee today.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Detmer. You know, I think we realize as legislators that we need periodic cleansing of some of our boards, some of our organizations, and so it's so valuable, or actually invaluable to us, that we have an Office of the Legislative Auditor that can, in a nonpartisan, non-biased way, go in and examine these issues. And I agree with you, Representative Detmer. I have every faith that the Minnesota High School League will be a better organization because of this audit. Representative Ward, I think you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, two. Did you want to do minutes from the previous meeting?
Would you like to approve the minutes? Representative Ward moves approval of the minutes of March 16. Is there any discussion, corrections, or additions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved for March 16. Thank you, Representative Ward.
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
I was going to call on Representative Bunker.
Well, reading through them, it was like, this was really nice. It was refreshing. It's been a long time since we've met,
yes,
and so
you.
It was really sweet to read them. But I do have a couple of questions.
Yes, please. Of Ms. Bombeck or Ms. Randall?
Yes.
Because we do have others coming.
Good. Other testifiers. Well, that's was one of my questions is for the department. The website issue seems to be something that comes up fairly often, excuse me, in terms of always needing to be updated, always needing fresh energy, clarity, transparency. And I'm just curious about the support that these boards have to do this. Do they have the technical wherewithal? Do they have the money to actually have somebody do a good job on this? I think it's something that cuts across the board, so that's not just this agency, but others as well.
Ms. Bombach.
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, I think part of our concern was not necessarily an upgrade, because there certainly is some interesting functionality on the league website. Our concern was that information regarding transfer student eligibility was scattered throughout the website. There was no single tab to click on to understand and get some really rich understanding of what are the consequences for transferring, what's going to happen if I transfer, in what ways would I be eligible, and then what's the penalty for transferring. So some of the information we found, it's only available through an administrative portal, so the public can't look at that. Some of it's in the very technical jargon in the official handbook, and while we see a need for that, there just wasn't a single source where activities administrators could refer families to a league website and say, if you want more information, here's where you can read about that. So it's really more an organizational issue that and content issue that we had.
Representative Ward, just to follow up on that, that's actually what a good web designer would do. And that's what I'm concerned, that we have the resources to hire somebody or, you know, a volunteer, somebody that really has the skills to understand these kinds of things, so that there is transparency, so it's easy for people to navigate. Because mm-hmm. it's, you can put up a website and it can be junk. But to have someone who really understands the accessibility issues and ease of navigation is really important. And I just wonder if the what kind of resources the league has to do that kind of thing.
Ms. Bombach?
Representative Ward, I think that might be a good question for the league. I will say that I thought their staff was, seemed very skilled and talented. And again, they have some interesting functionality on their website. It just doesn't seem to be the content regarding transfer students seems to be lacking.
Representative Ward, they have a very busy website. I go there frequently because I follow all the tournaments, and I find it very frustrating. But in regard to their finances, I have the state auditor's financial report from 15 and 16, and in 2016 they took in almost $16 million in revenue, most of that from tournaments. They spent over $17 million, so they did have a loss. They have other ways to make up for that, but I find nothing listed here in regard to technology. So looking at the specifics of their expenses and their revenues, they have data processing and office equipment, but nothing in regard specifically to technology. So that may be a question we want to ask them. Other questions from members for these? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe Mrs. Randall could just maybe give us a little taste of some of the calls that you got from some of the families around the state.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Detmer. I'll talk a little bit, but then also I think Ms. Bombach spoke with a number of those families as well. I think the calls we received were, families who were very frustrated. And sometimes they were frustrated with how the league provided them information, and sometimes they were frustrated with the criteria. And that doesn't mean the league did anything wrong, right? It's just that they didn't agree with the rules. And I think it's important to recognize, when Ms. Bondack put up the numbers, it was like 2,400 students transfer each year. And really a very small number come to appeal or come to an independent hearing officer. So for the vast majority of families and students, I think the process works relatively well. For those families where it doesn't work well, though, it has a really big impact. Sometimes athletics athletics are a reason why students stay in school. And it may be the one thing that's keeping them going to school, keeping them grounded, keeping them happy. And so I just think it's important to note that while the numbers may be small, the impact can be deep. So one example of a family I spoke with had a student who moved to live with his or her uncle because he or she, I don't remember the gender of the student, was just really unhappy in their school. And they thought, they need to kind of get out of their town, go be on the farm with the uncle, and wanted to play basketball or football or whatever the sport was over there. It wasn't an athletically motivated move, right? It was a, let me kind of ground myself, stay in school, and be able to participate in something that I love. I have no hopes of being a college athlete. I just, this is part of my experience. I'm only going to be in high school once. And that student was deemed ineligible. Because that's how the rules of the league are written. We can all hear that and feel like, oh gosh, I wish that kid could play because that it seems like the right thing for that kid. But then there are the rules. And so I think there's this struggle. A lot of times from the families we heard were some of those struggles of, we understand why the rules were written, but that doesn't apply here, and there doesn't seem like a place where that can get heard and where that kind of I want to say human touch. That makes it sound like the league is inhuman, and I'm not implying that, but you just kind of wanted a little more compassion. Sometimes the league would grant those types of special and unusual circumstances, and sometimes it wouldn't. And so understanding why somebody did get that and somebody else didn't was really hard to understand, and it was really hard for these families who had a big impact from these decisions. But, Madam Chair, if I could, I'd like Ms. Bombach to also respond, because I think she spoke to more of those families and heard more of those stories.
Ms. Bombach.
I think I will give one thing to remember, and that we kept telling ourselves, is that the bylaws in particular in the one-year ineligibility, it was approved by two-thirds of a quorum of the representative member schools. And so we recognize that the activities administrators want to see some restriction on transfers. And so although we didn't dig in deep in terms of how other states handled this issue, we do see that most other states have some matrix of criteria by which they restrict transfer student and their eligibility. There's sort of a whole continuum of options and penalties, and for each state, it's sort of finding that sweet spot that works for the administrators in that school. It doesn't mean it works for everybody. And so recognizing that there are going to be some students that get caught by the bylaws, and I'll give an example. A student moves for a very short period of time to attend a school in another state. It's immersion into an environmental school. The school does not offer sports, right? The student transfers away for 3 months and then transfers back into the former school for 3 months. Under the league bylaws, this student is ineligible for 2 years to compete in varsity athletics. The student can compete in junior varsity athletics, but cannot compete if the school it offers junior varsity. But the penalty that's imposed by the league is a 2-year term of ineligibility for varsity competition. So the frustration that we heard is in part what seems like a very harsh penalty for serving personal interests. On the other hand, activities administrators believe this 1-year ineligibility term is the way to deter athletically motivated transfers. So that's sort of a bit of what we heard.
Well, thank you to both Ms. Randall and Ms. Bomback. We need to move on to hear from the league itself, but thank you very much to the Office of Legislative Auditor for your stellar work again, and I know there will be some follow-ups to this probably in the next legislative session, but before that, from the league itself. So thank you very much for taking the time to present and digging into this issue on behalf of the Audit Commission. Thank you. Welcome to the testifying table. Please say your names for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Roger Arnson. I do legal and legislative work for the High School League, and it's my pleasure to introduce the league testifiers in the lineup here today. With me is Deb Pauley, who is one of our executive committee members. Ms. Pauley is also a chair of the school board in Jordan. We have Troy Erdahl that's going to visit with us as well. Mr. Erdahl is an athletic director and is also one of the members of our executive committee. And then Dave Stead, who's the executive director of the Minnesota State High School League, is here with us as well. In addition to the auditor's report, we saw that you all got a copy of the league's official handbook. This is a document that gets published annually. This is a document that you're going to find in every AD's office throughout Minnesota. You can see Representative Detmer smiling. He knows that he's seen these books before. We want to have that for a reference piece. And then I'm going to step through a couple of comments about the recommendations as well. And I want to say from a starting point, frankly, Representative Detmer said some of the things that I wanted to say. Our president reminded me that when we first were included for a report last year, that I actually reported to the board that this would be a good thing for us. Evaluation is very common to people that are in the education system. Madam Chair, you have worked on the evaluation provisions in the Teacher Tenure Act, in the Principal Tenure Act, and as Representative Detmer appropriately pointed out, the purpose of evaluation is that we improve performance. That's what we want to do. And I do think working with Ms. Bomba and Ms. Randall, I think that this report has that as a goal. That is to improve the performance of the league relative to the students. One of the things I want to direct your attention to in the report for a minute, just for scope purposes, if you take a peek at page 28 has a diagram that talks about the number of kids or students that are involved in transfers. And if you notice, you heard a number that ranges in the 2,400 number. One of the things that you need to do on that is you back out the foreign exchange students. And so when we take them out, that's where you get to this average number of 1,747 that you see on initial transfer decisions at the school level. That does not include foreign exchange students. By the way, one of the things OLA noted, and we noted as well, how did you have a number of students for 14-15 and 15-16 that turned out to be identical? And it is just one of those things that we happen to have the same number each year. But if you notice, ADs, athletic directors, or activities directors, have to look at students when they come in and make a decision, is this kid eligible? Everyone signs a form every year, and they have to certify locally that the students are ineligible. If they've moved, come from somewhere else, then initially the determination is that they're ineligible. And so you get 1,700 about number initially. Well, then we look at those, half of those, then they're a reason. They physically moved into the district. They're automatically eligible. We take that number out. Then we have a denial of eligibility of 840. And the reason I want you to step through this a little bit is out of that 840, the league hears of 132 of those in the average of the 2 years that we're here. Of those 132, half of them the league looks at with the staff and say they're eligible. That leaves us with about 63. Of the 63, 53 demand or ask for a hearing process. You can see kind of where we're going. Of that 53, when the league looks at it closely, 23 of those, they get the hearing request. 20 of them, we determine, are eligible. So now we're left with about 23 students. Of those, 10 request a hearing. You know, and when you get down to the hearings and the decisions, you know, that you're talking about, this is a small number of kids in the context of 80,000 students who participate in our extracurriculars annually. It's important, and it's important that it's done right, but putting this in context is important as well, you know, in terms of how we do this. And it is not unusual, as Representative Detmer pointed out, that you may very well hear from those 23s, those 10s, et cetera. They're calling you saying, I want my child to be eligible, which is normal in all this, you know, as we step through this. A couple of things in the recommendations in the evaluation, and the league submitted, and we've had this report for 2.5 weeks now. Let me say that legislative auditor gives you a report that has a big sticker on the front of it that says the disclosure of this is a misdemeanor. And so, you know, in the particular world that we live in, everybody wants to know, you know, what's in that report, what's going on, and we've kept this pretty tight, but we've had the opportunity to look at this for quite a while now, analyze it. One of our lawyers here, Kevin Beck, who's a brilliant young lawyer, actually played the major role in putting this letter together, and he's available to answer some questions, and he handles the eligibility cases as well. But let's step through the recommendations. If you look at our letter, which is in the back, and if you notice, the first recommendation is that we should improve our online transfer forms and correspondence. I think what's important to note here, when we looked at this report, we made a decision that we want to do as many of these recommendations and implement them as we can before the next school year. Our board actually turns over on August 1, and we have a major organizational meeting in August, and you'll see anticipated completion date, and we've looked at other legislative auditor reports as well, and that's a format that's used here kind of routinely, but we're taking that very seriously. Ms. Randall said to me in one of the meetings, when I said, well, we'll do that, and she said if she had a nickel for every time someone said, oh, yeah, well, we can do that, she would be doing quite well, and I think that's a fair comment. So the challenge is then to look and see where we are after the beginning of the next school year to see if we've met this. The second provision here, number two, this is a category of eligibility exception that we have if the student was subject to intolerable circumstances or intolerable conditions at the prior school. And we've looked at that. We actually think what we were going for in that rule is bullying. And that it would be better actually to make the reference right into the statutory bullying statute. Now, the recommendation here is that the department monitor cases that involve transfers and bullying. I do think one of the things you need to keep in mind is the bullying happens in the school in year one. The student transfers then in year two. There's an eligibility determination that goes from the local school up to us. By the time that gets to us, that we'd be reporting it to the department, the bullying was pretty far back in the past there, and what we really need to do is make sure we're addressing that in the schools at the time. This is a fine recommendation. We don't have a problem with it, but I say I don't know that it's going to change an awful lot given how far it is down the process at that point. Recommendation number three, this says that the league should establish a fair hearing process. And what we really want to talk about on this is that these aren't so much fair hearings as they are eligibility reviews. And if you decide that you wanted to adopt this legislatively, we think there's a little sidecar that ought to come along with this that says participation in extracurricular activities. And if you notice, on this is in the bottom part of page 3 in our letter, that we should also have, if we're going to put this in state law, we should have language that says participation in extracurricular activities is a privilege and not a right. We argue that routinely. Mr. Beck has that in the federal district cases that we have. But if you think about it, that actually reflects what the law is and what the practice is. I mean, we can't have litigation about kids who get cut from teams. We can't have litigation about, you know, does someone have a right to play a particular length of time? All of those issues that make up the nuts and bolts of what occurs. So if you decide to do this, if you don't do this, we are going to have a process anyway, and we're going to have an improved process. We have other provisions of policy requirements in state law. You require that we have a sexual harassment policy. You require that we have a bullying policy. I think this goes in line with that, so it would be fine to have it in state law. Recommendation number 4 talks about improving the review of our staff decisions and really talks about making this more connected into the board. Again, we've said that we're going to implement this recommendation as it's set out here prior to 17-18. Number 5 talks about improving the website and its content, and I think the chair's pointed out this is a very complex website, and there is we have a lot of room to improve on that, and I think Representative Ward concerns about that are good. We do have a technology staff, and we'll be looking at that. Number 6 talks about adding statutes that say what should we have relative to our rulemaking posted on the website. And we're going to do all these things, whether you pass legislation on this or not. So if you feel compelled to do that, fine. If you don't, fine. We're going to do this anyway. And then the last recommendation is in two parts. And it talks about having the department do some more review of our policies and rules, and we do interact with the department on a lot of questions from time to time. The last one talks about discretionary review by the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and we'll leave that to your discretion. This is about not individual complaints about the application of our rules, but complaints about the rules themselves. This does have a significant economic component to it. I mean, if you read through the statute closely, it says that the Coordinating Commission can actually send you into rulemaking if they think you need to have a full rulemaking piece as well. And we have concerns about that and the economic components of that. So overall, Madam Chair, we think this is a good report, and we think there's a lot that we can do here to implement that. We look forward to working with you on that and the members of your committee and see what direction you want to go through that from here. So thank you, Madam Chair, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ironson. Welcome, Ms. Pauley. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Deborah Pauley. Okay. Chair Erickson, respected committee, thank you for the opportunity to be one of the speakers today on behalf of the High School League in regard to the Legislative Auditor's Report on the League. I'm Deborah Pauley from Jordan and have been actively involved in my community, its schools, and with youth of our community and beyond for many years. In 2006, I was appointed and subsequently elected 3 times to serve on my local Jordan Public School Board. I've served as treasurer of my board and currently am in my 6th year as board chair. In 2010, I was appointed and subsequently elected to 2 more 3-year terms to serve on the Minnesota School Boards Association, representing District 13. And eventually I'll get to why this is important to the league. I represent District 13 for the state of Minnesota on the Minnesota School Boards Association, which stretches from Watertown to New Prague and Prior Lake to Norwood Young America. MSBA serves over 330 school districts across the state of Minnesota, and MSBA is the leading advocate for public education, supports and promotes and strengthens the work of public schools, and serves the students of our state. Per the Minnesota State High School League bylaws, 2 of the seats that are held in the Minnesota State High School League are appointed from the MSBA, the Minnesota School Boards Association Board of Directors. I am one of 2 of those. I hold one of those seats. The other seat is held by Betsy Anderson from Hopkins. I currently am serving, sad to say, in my last year of my four-year term on the Minnesota State High School League Board. And I want to share with you a little bit about what an honor and great responsibility it is to serve in that role and to be a representative for all the school boards as I sit on the Minnesota State High School League Board. As an elected board member and chair, and as an elected MSBA board member, we are in communication routinely with our elected state representatives and senators. I am very proud to say that Senator Eric Pratt and Representative Tony Albright represent my district, and I work very closely with them. Yesterday, in fact, I and over 90 other Minnesota school board members spent the day here at the Capitol lobbying for education. And I'm proud to say that legislators here have been very responsive when we contact them with our needs, wants, and concerns. So thank you all for that. We are in the kid business. The high school league is in the kid business. We all here want what is best for kids. We want good oversight of how we do business to serve and protect those kids. We want fairness and we want opportunities. And when appropriate, we welcome legislative oversight. Ultimately, what we want as pre-K through 12 educators is to give kids the tools they need to succeed and be well-rounded persons. Working cooperatively with school educators, this is a strength of the Minnesota State High School League. They provide a myriad of fantastic opportunities and experience for tens of thousands of kids across our state. A great strength of the league is its independence from legislative and the Department of Ed overreach. We consider this with great responsibility and know that we are entrusted to use it very wisely. And I, having served on the board, I truly feel that all of the board members take that responsibility incredibly, incredibly strong. As a local school board member, MSBA director, and high school league director, I've witnessed firsthand that none of these boards are rubber stamp boards. In MSBA training seminars, where we train boards across the whole state of Minnesota, we learned that a board is to set policy and parameters and monitor and evaluate those policies and procedures. And then we hire good, competent professionals, and we get out of their way. And we let them do what they are good at and hired to do with appropriate oversight. Trust but verify. I was pleasantly surprised when I got on the Minnesota State High School League board to find that same philosophy and practice. The league has a solid set of bylaws and policies in place, and we, as a board, review, make appropriate changes when needed through a sound, well-researched, and inclusive process, and we monitor the work of the league. The league's board committee structure is sound and encompasses oversight in the areas of audit and finance, which is the committee that I serve on, marketing and communication, technology and coaches and officials education, and most importantly for this committee, eligibility. Board members are tasked with review, input, and ultimately decision-making that is then referred to the full board for a vote. Over my tenure on the league board, I have found all of our board members take their committee assignments and work very seriously, sometimes probably too seriously. The league has a very competent, thorough, and good staff who provide us with the necessary documentation and materials we need to make sound decisions. Input and expertise from our board members who are in the trenches carry out the mission of the league every day and guide our decisions and help us work through the process. In preparation for this hearing, I spoke with our current, in my local Jordan district, I spoke with our current new athletic director, who just became athletic director this year, and with our former athletic director, who was there for a long time and has now become our high school principal. I asked them about the eligibility and transfer process and their dealings with how that all works and with the league. They validated what I already knew about the workings of the league. In regards to transfers and eligibility, both of them affirmed that most often transfers are relatively clear-cut because of the training that they have had by the league and by the materials that they're provided by the league. And whenever they have a question or are in doubt or
they both said the league, and in particular Dr. Craig Perry and Dave Stead, have been incredibly responsive, thorough, and they feel very, very fair. Hands down, our executive director, Dave Stead, is known as being a wise, ethical, fair, and steady leader. Both of my ADs said that the league is always there for them when they need help. As a representative of the MSBA board, I hear some similar comments from other ADs across the state. Both my AD and former AD have commented how important it is for them to have the straightforward guidelines on transfers that the league has laid out. Oftentimes, they get those transfer requests that kind of tug at your heart. Some of the examples that were given up here, you know, we're in the people business, and we all, those of us that have kids, we all know we want the best for our kids. So oftentimes, those things that come before our ADs are really tug-at-the-heart decisions. That my ADs said that having the guidance and rules of the league takes politics out of their decisions and makes things fair. I quote, it's quite black and white, and that's how it needs to be. If there are too many gray areas, we would be opening ourselves to unfairness and challenges. Having served on this board, I've seen firsthand the enormous amount of work, dedication, and caring that happens before we get to those state tournaments and place that medal on our students. I recently had a couple very moving moments when I personally witnessed how the good work of the league can impact a life. One was at the championship game of the boys' class AA hockey tournament, as Moorhead and Grand Rapids played their hearts out, and Moorhead came out on the losing end of the game. I witnessed the Grand Rapids players jubilantly celebrating their victory. And as any team that comes out on the losing end, I witnessed the disappointment and the tears of the losing Moorhead players who were huddling on the ice. Prior to the medal ceremony, one of the Moorhead players came off the ice away from his team, came over to the bench, and hugged a Down syndrome fan who was in the player's seating area, who was absolutely devastated and just crying hysterically. He came over to console him. That Moorhead player and his fan were the true winners of that tournament. In closing, I want you to know that we at the high school league, that we have a high school league that is highly regarded throughout the state of Minnesota, and that we have a leader, and that we are known nationally as leader. We are recognized across the country for the good works we do for kids and how we do business. I'm proud to serve on their board and be a representative for the 336 districts across the state. I truly thank you for this opportunity. Like Roger said, it is so important that we continually, all of us continually try to do better and make our jobs better and the roles that we play, especially in the lives of kids, better. So I do support our current transfer rules, and I acknowledge that there's room for growth and improvement. And I can tell you that at the executive committee level, we have already talked about some of these improvements that they will be, you know, they're in the works, they will be put in place. They're good recommendations. We appreciate the opportunities you recommend in your study and know that the board and the league staff will work closely on those recommendations. It is only through working together to improve and grow that we can best continue to do what is best for kids. Thank you, Chair Erickson, for the opportunity to speak today, and to all you elected officials before me for the great work that you do on behalf of the great state of Minnesota, and in particular for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Polly. I just have a couple of recommendations. After meeting with the auditors, I would like you to reexamine your bylaws. I'm not sure that they're written as clearly and succinctly as they should be.
Okay.
And also to... When the board adopts procedures and the schools are not really included in the vetting, I think that's something that you need to take a closer look at. Those are two of my findings. As I have listened to the auditors, I still have to read the report completely. But, you know, bylaws really, you know, they seem like something that's just superficial. But bylaws are the substance, the foundation of an organization. And I looked at the procedure that you use, but it doesn't seem to me like the bylaw changes are actually that professionally done. I know there's a table in here, so Those are two of my comments. And Representative Detmer, did you have a question for Ms. Paula?
Yeah, a question I have regarding recommendation number three, and maybe Mr. Erdahl could address this being on the board.
Well, then let's wait and let him present.
Yeah.
Mr. Erdahl, welcome to the – thank you, Ms. Pauly, by the way. Welcome to our committee. Say your name for the record and begin.
My name is Troy Erdahl. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I've been the Director of Athletics and Activities at St. Anthony Village High School for the past 12 years. I'm the past president of the Minnesota State High School Coaches Association, and I'm the current vice president of the Minnesota State High School League's Board of Directors. I was elected to my seat by Region 4 AA. During my brief time today, I'd like to talk about my perspective of the MSHSL transfer rules as an activities director. St. Anthony Village High School is a mid-sized high school with nearly 700 students. 60% of our high school student population is open enrolled. Last year, over half of our students played a sport, and in total, over 70% of our student body participated in a school activity or sport. Our school works hard to make connections between our students and school, and ultimately to provide great student participation experiences. As the activities director for St. Anthony, one of my responsibilities is administering student eligibility. Of all our participants, this year we've had a total of 8 student transfers to review. Of these 8 transfers, we've had transfers without a change in residence, transfers with family residence changes, an international student who moved to our community, transfers from public schools, transfers between divorced parents, and transfers from non-public schools. Of these transfers, one family requested and was granted an appeal of the original eligibility determination. In each instance, our school was able to understand and properly apply the current MSHSL transfer and eligibility bylaws. If we ever have a situation requiring guidance, the league office is a quick email or phone call away. It's the responsibility of high schools to make original eligibility determinations. The high school league is there for us as a resource in making these decisions. The eligibility bylaws schools follow are the product of our state's member schools. Member schools developed and approved the current MSHSL transfer bylaws as a way to maintain fairness in interscholastic competition. Our state's high schools are active members in developing the rules of the high school league. As a league, we are continually striving to improve, and we're open to ideas that will make us a stronger organization and improve student experiences. The Minnesota State High School League is respected nationwide for its excellence in administering student activities, and this report before you today will be a good opportunity for us to review current procedures and policies. Madam Chair and committee members, I understand how important your time is, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and share some perspectives as an activities director. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Erdahl. Representative Detmer, did you have a question of Mr. Erdahl?
Yes, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Erdahl. Do you have some relationships here on the committee?
There may be one.
Okay. I think he's pretty proud of you, by the way.
And rightfully so. Parents love their children, and we're proud of them.
In terms of recommendation three, some of the issues that I listened to parents was that many times the hearing process took a long time for the hearing to take place. Could you maybe explain to the committee that what's the process where, because you have a lot of different gears in the works here. You got the family, the athlete, in this case the athlete, you got the parents, you got the athletic director, maybe the school board member, or you might have the principal, and then you have the league. And what is the process that goes through, and why sometimes it takes such a long time for a hearing to take place? And many times, by the time the hearing takes place, the sports season is over. And why sometimes you had cases where at the hearing all of a sudden it was reversed. The decision was reversed even before the hearing. So what takes place in terms of the board members?
Mr. Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, I would ask that Mr. Steds to my left help with that question, as he's more intimately involved in the timeline and process. And I believe it was 10 hearings from the previous year. In my experiences as an activities director, our school has requested a hearing once in my tenure, and it resulted in student eligibility, and the timeline worked for that student to be able to participate in a timely manner. Mr. Stead, I believe, could speak better to some of the nuances you were asking about.
Madam Chair, I know I started teaching and coaching in 1973. There wasn't such a thing as open enrollment.
That's right.
And when this all took place, it kind of really, really expanded the responsibilities of the league in making decisions. So regarding recommendation 3, and welcome to the committee. So.
Welcome, Mr. Stead. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Dave Stead, Madam Chair, Representative Detmer. The hearing process is really an expedited one if we have all the information. There are times some parents will wait until right before a sports season begins to appeal the decision. And as that appeal comes in, we gather the information that they provide for us based on whatever their circumstance happens to be, contact a hearing examiner, and arrange a time then for both the parent and the hearing examiner that we have. And we have three of them who are made available to meet, make a determination, and within 3 days we'll have an answer to that question. There have been occasions when we have needed more information from the parent, and the parent has either delayed getting the information or it wasn't available until a later date. And sometimes parents will have a hearing request early in the year, but the athlete isn't looking for an activity until perhaps the spring, so there's a delay during that period of time until a final decision is made. But we try to do that as quickly as we possibly can. In some cases, it takes a little bit longer, but most often we're able to get the hearing taken care of almost immediately.
And
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, does the family have to go through the local athletic director, or can they contact the league office directly?
Both. Oftentimes the family will contact the athletic director, who will contact the office and say, here's information, this family would like a hearing, and on behalf of the family we're requesting a hearing. Sometimes the family will come directly to the office and ask for a hearing based on their child's eligibility.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you.
Mr. Stead, I misspoke earlier when I said this was the state auditor's report. This is your audit report that I found online. What is your arrangement with U.S. Bank Stadium now as far as tournaments? And would any of that information be contained in an annual report ongoing?
Madam Chair, it will be next year because this is the first year we've had an opportunity to be in U.S. Bank Stadium. Thanks to the legislature, we have been there at no cost to us. There is an issue we still need to address. They believe that they should charge a $2 facility fee for us to be there. We believe the legislation says the lessee cannot charge the league to be there, and therefore the number of dollars that we receive and the fact that we don't have to pay to be in that facility, thanks to what the legislature did, will provide significant numbers dollars back to the schools to help with their participation during the postseason play.
And, Mr. Stead, could you provide this committee with a foundation report from the last 3 years prior to going forward with the legislation to dedicate the sales tax? But going back 3 years, would you provide this committee with that information?
Madam Chair, thank you. And the foundation, as many of you know, has had a sunset, and that bill is in the current House Tax Committee, the Senate Tax Committee, I believe in the governor's bill as well. The High School League Foundation annually, at least until the sunset, gathered about $750,000 to $800,000 a year. It was in existence for 9 years before the sunset was put in place, and we've returned about $7 million directly back to schools. I happen to serve on the foundation for the National Federation of State High School Associations. We have about $6 million. They're reluctant to give anything back to the state associations, and I've challenged that for a long period of time. Our goal is to keep about $12,000 to $20,000 just as operational costs, and all the rest goes directly back to our member schools. So that's what our role has been, because we want to provide as much support for schools as we possibly can. Thanks to you and thanks to your support, the foundation has been very operable. Schools have had a wonderful opportunity to enhance the programs that they have through that the support that you've provided in the past. And we hope that will continue in the future as well.
Thank you, Mr. Stead, and we'll look forward to receiving those reports. And then one final question about the state auditor report. As I read through what was submitted to me for the year ending July 31 of 16, it seems that within your regions you have some weaknesses, and I'm wondering how you're going to address that. For example, I noticed that for tournaments there was some revenue reports that weren't validated, perhaps. Some were not signed. Some did not have ticket numbers beginning and ending. Several notations here in the state auditor's report. Could you comment on that, please?
Madam Chair, thank you. We meet three times a year at least with the region secretaries. The region secretaries have a responsibility to 16 different areas around the state per our constitution. We meet with them. We review the state auditor's report with them. There are occasions when perhaps an athletic director holding a tournament in their school, a subsection or section tournament, may have inadvertently not signed a ticket report when it is submitted, and that's caught by a local auditor or the state auditor if they happen to do the audit. That's been noted to them, or perhaps a ticket number, the beginning and the end of a ticket roll of numbers has been recorded incorrectly, and that's been reported as well. We want to do as much as we possibly can to ensure that every nickel is accounted for. I think our region secretaries do a good job, but that doesn't mean we can't do a better job of making sure that all those pieces come together in the appropriate manner.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Mr. Stead? Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Could I just make a couple of comments as well? Okay. Thank you. And regarding the legislative auditor's review, I've had the opportunity to meet with Valerie and Judy and talk with them on a number of different occasions. And frankly, we welcome the report, as was suggested earlier. This is an opportunity for us not to be better, but to get better, because that's what we always want to try to do in everything that we do. So we welcome that, and in fact, I've already begun to reach out to colleagues around the state to find out what they do as far as their transfer rule processes are concerned. And Valerie and Judy both have indicated that there are some websites that they've reviewed that are very proper, very good ones, and I want to talk with them about what sites those are so we can pick up that information as well. Participation in high school activities is important. I'm sure a number of you have done that. And we find, I think, through some surveys both regionally, locally, and nationally, that only about 3% of the students who participate in athletic programs ever go on to college and have a game or a competition following their high school career. But 97% of the kids involved in our activities will become a member of some one community. They may become teachers. They may become lawyers. They may become business people. Certainly, we hope that they'll become parents who live and become very productive in whatever community in which they live. We want them to have as valuable an experience as they can possibly have had in high school so that as they rear their children, as they become productive members of community, it'll help grow and support all the positive things that happen in every community around Minnesota. As you've heard before, the High School League is one of the most respected organizations in the country. Our board members annually, some of them will go to a national conference and come back and say they're surprised that Minnesota has done things that other states are just beginning to talk about. For us, that's a positive, but it also becomes a negative because our colleagues, perhaps in other states, haven't been as proactive as our board members or our member schools have been. But we're very proud of the tournaments we run for 250,000 kids and over 500 member schools, both public, private, homeschools, and charter schools as well. We run hundreds of tournaments around the state and are able to provide thousands of dollars back to schools to help defer and defray some of the costs that they incur when they come to different tournaments. But we also incur a significant number of costs. For example, our hockey tournament at the Xcel Energy Center last year cost $600,000 for us to be there for 4 days of hockey. The volleyball tournament at the Xcel Center last year cost $125,000 to be there for volleyball. And Representative Detmer is one of our wrestling officials, was at the wrestling tournament the last couple of years at the Xcel Center. The cost for the wrestling tournament this last year was $335,000 just to be there. That's why we so value what you were able to do when it came time for U.S. Bank Stadium, to make sure that the dollars that we have to expend at being at these different venues can go directly back to support the schools in the publicly financed facilities that are utilized by our member schools as well. 30 years ago, I was an associate director for the High School League. Became the executive director 28 years ago. And when I was the associate director, the transfer rule, and Representative Detmer may recall this as well, there were three things that were in the transfer rule for which someone could appeal. If the circumstances of the transfer were unusual, unavoidable, or unforeseen. That's about as broad as you can get. And courts at that time said you need to have something very specific in place or you're going to be in court all the time. That's when I met with Dwayne Harvis. Dwayne Harvis was the chief administrative law judge for the state of Minnesota, and he said we need to have a process in place. We should have a hearing process that addresses these issues similar to what we have now. And he's the one who, with our attorney at the time and myself, developed the process. It gave people an opportunity for a hearing along some very specific lines. You may recall Ruth Randall, when she was a commissioner of education at Governor Perpich, developed the open enrollment concept. The feeling was that open enrollment meant kids can go whatever school they wanted to go and athletic eligibility would transfer with them. That's never been a part of the bill. You can read the words, and that was never there. But it was perceived to be the case. And Commissioner Randall at the time said the same thing. We believe that kids should be able to transfer for athletic purposes as well. Our schools didn't agree with that. But we went along with the fact that kids could have a one-year transfer from wherever they were to another school and be eligible. That was fraught with concerns by schools because what they found was as kids went from one school to another to build a better team, it wasn't the good athletes in the school they transferred to that were ineligible or couldn't participate. It were the kids sitting on the bench, the 14th or 15th or 16th student participating who was now displaced by someone who came in from a different school just because they wanted to be on a better athletic team. So our school said, that's not good. We need to make a change. And we did. Through the representative assembly process we have, any bylaws that's been proposed and discussed by the region committees around the state, we have a representative assembly then that meets and votes on that bylaw change. And the next change said 50% of the time. The first half of the season, if you transferred and came in, you couldn't participate. But you could participate in practices. You could play in the JV team. But the second half of the year, you could participate for your varsity team. And we found that kids would transfer out of state, and then they would come back, sit out 50% of the time, and still displace students. So our school said we think that we should go back to one full year of ineligibility, but yet be able to transfer and still remain eligible at the school from which you transferred. Seems strange, but we have kids who do that. We have kids who will leave for a better academic program or a perceived better academic program, but still will retain varsity eligibility at the school from which they transferred. Not many, but some who believe that they want the better academic opportunity and still play at the varsity level. The bylaw may seem to be harsh to a number of people, but our schools want to continue to ensure equitable participation and eligibility alike. We're 100 years old as an organization. We constantly work to improve and to do what our member schools need. We've added activities different from what many school districts have, but from what many state associations have. We added clay target shooting. That's the fastest growing activity in Minnesota. In fact, it's the fastest growing activity in the nation. Began right here in Minnesota with a man named Jim Sable who came to my office and said, what do you think about having guns and kids shooting clay targets? And I said, in our schools? You're nuts. He said, no, that won't be in our schools. We'll set up a system where kids can go to gun clubs. They'll have gun training. They'll do all kinds of things to ensure that safety is our number one priority, and it's grown by leaps and bounds. Who would have thought that schools would be involved in robotics competition? And yet Minnesota was the first state in the country to support robotics competition. That's begun to spread nationwide as well. And the Adapted Athletics Program that we have, and we've been involved now for 25 years. Other state associations don't have that kind of thing. Some of them are beginning to look at what we can do for the kids who are cognitively and physically impaired. We've been providing support for them for a very long time. So Minnesota has always been a leader. And as a leader in education-based athletics, we welcome the information that's been provided by the legislative auditor. And we're going to continue to provide changes to what we're doing, to provide support for parents and students and activities directors who may be new to the transfer rule. And with their support and with the work of our staff, we intend to have that in place by August of next year. So as school starts, we won't have to worry about the kinds of issues perhaps that have been identified here. Because our goal is to address the issues that have been presented, make them better, make them more visible, make them more transparent, and get information that we have that the legislative auditors have found to help provide us with that information. So thank you very much for the opportunity to share this information with you.
Thank you, Mr. Stad. And we have just a couple minutes left. The department, I need to hear from the department. If you would come forward, please. Thank you, gentlemen.
Madam Chair, could I just add something quickly?
Sure.
Mr. Stad?
I'm sorry.
Just real quickly, if there are some language changes statutorily that you need, make sure you convey them to us, please. I noted that their statutes may need to change, so let us know what that language should be. And if you do have any trouble with your vice president, just let me know, and I'll take care of it.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, thank you very much. I'll contact you right after the meeting.
Mr. Cordy.
About the vice president.
Members, we have to adjourn at 15 before the hour. So welcome to our committee, and please say your name for the record and make your comments in regard to the department's accountability role.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to come up here and give some comments on the OLA report. We thank them, as always, for the hard work and the good work that they do, taking a look at the different programs that we have partnerships with. This one was a little bit of a unique one because we weren't the direct subject of the audit, but there were some references that were made in there. I'd encourage you to take a look at the agency response letter that was submitted by Commissioner Caselius that's at the back of the report there. I think that does a good job summarizing what our positions were on this. For the most part, we support the recommendations and again, think that the auditors did a good job pointing out the different issues that were brought up. There were a couple of areas where we would have an increased oversight role. Traditionally, our role has been limited because this is an independent nonprofit organization that was set up at the legislature with significant autonomy, so we're always careful to make sure that our role is limited to what exists in statute. And so we would ask that if there is a desire by the legislature to expand that role, that we be explicit about that and make sure that there is actual legislation directing us to expand or exert our authority in a different way than we've been doing it. We don't want to get in a position where we're being accused of overreach or exceeding our authority. One other thing I would point out, there are a couple of recommendations that would significantly expand the work that we do and that would require us to add additional staff time and resources. So we, as always, would ask that the legislature keep that in mind as you're passing these recommendations on what the impact of the agency's resources would be. And then lastly, specific to recommendation number 2, which would have us review appeals that had to do with intolerable conditions. This is work that would be taken on by our School Safety Technical Assistance Center, which, as you may know, is defunded in the House Education funding bill. So it would be nearly impossible for us to do that work if that center was eliminated. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and please take a look at that letter and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. So in regard to Recommendation 5, the league should modify its website to improve its content and access to transfer student eligibility information to the public and member schools. Does the department receive complaints when these issues occur, when they're trying to navigate the website? And perhaps do they call the department? I know sometimes they email me, mm-hmm. but could you comment on that?
Madam Chair, yes, we definitely get calls from parents or other folks who interact with the league, not just on the website, but on any number of issues. We're the Department of Education, so we're a pretty logical place for folks to go when they have questions that are related to what's going on in a school. So we do get those. There's not really a formal kind of complaint process unless it is a violation of one of the several laws that we implement, which and our oversight is assigned to. So, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, Section 504 of the Rehab Act, Title IX, those are the types of complaints where we'll do more investigation. But in terms of just, general usability, accessibility of the website, I'm not sure we necessarily have authority there unless it would be in violation of some law that we oversee compliance for.
Does Mr. Cordy, does MDE do their annual review of the high school league as prescribed in law?
Madam Chair, yes, we do.
And what do you look for?
Sure. So the legislation itself has I believe, five different criteria that,
yes,
that we go through, and we publish a report to the legislature every year. And you know, you can pull that up through the Legislative Reference Library, and they've got them all archived there for you. So, yes, those five criteria are included in that report. And then if there are any additional things, there's kind of a catch-all provision in the statute that allows the commissioner to investigate any league activities or league-related issues as she sees fit. So then if there are any other, you know, issues that come up, then we would include those in the report as well.
And so, Mr. Cordy, the department does communicate to the high school league any complaints that come or any concerns that you might have after your annual review, correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. You know, it's an ongoing dialogue, but in terms of the collection of the actual data that's put into the report, that's done on an annual basis.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. Cordy? Very good. Thank you, everyone who attended today. A special thank you to the Office of the Legislative Auditor and to Valerie Bombach and Judy Randall for their work. And I know there was someone who assisted you, Ms. Bombach, and I have neglected to give her credit. Carrie Meyerhoff, thank you very much for your work. Really appreciate this, and this will be an ongoing topic for us. So with that, members, this meeting is adjourned.